Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Paul Millen. How are you, Paul?
Oh, I'm well, thanks, Chris.
What's the name of your company, Paul?
Well, I'm working for the New Zealand Dryland Forest Initiative.
You do something a bit strange, well, a bit strange for our show anyway. What are you guys doing?
We're growing durable eucalypt timber from trees from Australia.
And what are you doing with them?
We're aiming to grow trees to produce naturally durable post-wood as well as other high-quality durable timbers.
Okay, and what seems to be the problem with current fence posts? I've been up and down the vineyards in Marlborough today, and there seems to be a lot of posts there. What's the issue with the current ones?
There's a number of issues, Chris. The first issue really came onto the scene in 2003 when local community concern arose over the possibility of chrome, copper, arsenic leachates from the posts going into the soil of the vineyards. There was some real concern in the market about whether that might even taint the wine.
Okay. Are they is it called tannilisation? Is that what?
That's right. Chrome, copper, arsenic are the chemicals used to tannil, what's called to produce a tannilised post.
And they're the sort of greeny tinged ones, aren't they?
That's it. They have that green dyed look when they've been treated in that way.
Why do you put these chemicals in the posts?
Well, pine timber is non-durable, which basically means if you don't treat it and used it as a post, it wouldn't last longer than 3 or 4 years in the ground. Mm-hmm. One of the other problems with the pine current CCA-treated pine posts for vineyards that we discovered, aside from the potential for leachates, is that they're actually weak as well. It's not a strong timber, and in Marlborough, where virtually all of the harvesting is with large machines, if those posts are hit by machines during harvesting, then they break. So because, again, of the posts being treated with chrome, copper, arsenics, the actual broken post is a hazardous waste and can't be burnt in a fire or something like that. It's actually got to be landfilled. And so that became or is an issue for the industry and for the local regional council here in Marlborough.
Oh, okay. So they're almost like toxic waste, aren't they?
Yeah, that's the one. They are actually quite toxic and need to be handled correctly. So you see there was a number of issues all came together that clearly these pine posts weren't doing the job in the way that the wine sector would have liked to have had, for particularly for their sustainability. And the industry, we like to think the industry's here for the long term, and if you consider then an issue like this, it's one that they'd like to eliminate and have a better product to be able to be used in the vineyards.
What about overseas? Is this a problem in other countries?
It is a problem in Australia. There's definitely similar issues in Australia and the Australian vineyards. But what was interesting to me in 2003 when the issue arose was that there is plenty of actual eucalypt species that are naturally durable. So they can have durability equivalent to a treated pine post.
Because eucalypts are commonly filled up with oils and things like that, aren't they?
Yeah, they've got what we call extractives, that are pretty, not all of them, but those that are durable. And those extractives, a lot's not known about those extractives and what imparts natural durability, but clearly they've got a mix of probably oils and other products that resist fungal attack. Yeah. So those Australian eucalypt species, they'd traditionally been used, in fact, in vineyards in Australia. I've travelled regularly to Oz and been to some of the more notable areas for wine growing there, like the Hunter Valley, and I've seen eucalypt posts that are still being used in the vineyards. But it's like a lot of places around the world, that natural forest that they were cutting those posts from has been cut out. And inevitably, once it ran out, they were faced with having to replace it with whatever they had available, which, as it turned out, is a treated pine post.
I suppose also if there is any left, they're probably now protected anyway.
That's it. If you go to any of the areas around those vineyards, then you'll find there's little stands of eucalypts left, but all of them are protected because they're natural remnant forests of what was once vast areas of forest.
So you got these eucalypts in Australia. Do you just bring them over and plant them up and away you go? Is that how it was?
It was a bit like that, really, Chris, to start with, because I actually thought there were already possibly people had planted quite a lot of these durable trees in New Zealand, because we've got a lot of eucalypts out in our landscapes, and a lot of people, I've been growing different eucalypts for 25 years myself. But
in my old house in Dunedin, we had a big gum tree in the back garden.
That's right, pretty typical, you know, of many of New Zealand's east coast landscapes, particularly our eucalypts. But on closer research, and this included travelling to various other regions in New Zealand, so it wasn't just in our Marlborough region, while I found a few small stands of some of these durable species and was able to cut some posts out of some of that wood, that only confirmed the quality of the timber. And here we are in Saracens in Marlborough, and they've bought a few posts that we've been able to produce and are very happy with those posts. But clearly there wasn't a resource in New Zealand, so it really then became a project to focus on, can we grow new forests of these durable species so that we can supply our vineyards but also produce other product. We've got people involved who are in the Electrical Networks Association.
Yeah.
They need it for crossarms.
On the power poles.
On the top of power poles. Yeah. And even power poles, you can, there's no, a lot of the original power poles in New Zealand were all imported Australian hardwood, which is basically, they were all eucalypt.
Yeah, a lot of them made of concrete these days, aren't they?
Yeah, and big costs with those concrete ones. And if you're looking at carbon footprinting, there's a high and imbibed energy cost with producing concrete.
Why don't they use concrete posts in a vineyard, for example?
Well, concrete has some use, I understand, in Europe, but the difficulty, again, we have in New Zealand is where you have mechanical harvesting. If you hit a concrete post, it's pretty tough on the machine, and it's likely to crack the post, and then you get water into the crack and the post will weaken over time. So they're not really a viable option.
Okay.
The other reason we think the vineyards are interested in alternative post being naturally durable timber is that has been the historic look within vineyards. In places like Europe, where you've had the wine industry there for hundreds of years, they use chestnut timber and black locust or robinia timber for postwood. And, you know, that's what people expect to see. I mean, we've got recycled plastic posts being used, and they might work, but they're not a good look
in
the vineyard. And Marlborough's, you know, beautiful landscape and wood has been traditionally used in the last 30 years, these tree posts.
What about galvanised steel or something like that?
There's been some use of steel in some of the vineyards, and you'd need to talk to, you know, wine growers to really establish their views on it. But from what I've seen, and I've talked to a few of them, is those posts often in the lighter soils, they just don't have the stability that timber does. They're too narrow and they can blow over in a big wind.
Okay.
And then you also get the problem of the constant wind speeds here working away at the metal, and you get metal fatigue, and then they can snap off. So, you know, a piece of railway iron would work. But then again, you've got your issues around harvesting. You start hitting something that's substantial with your machine, you might be damaging the machine. The beauty of timber, and particularly we think the eucalypt timber, is it's a hardwood with high elasticity. In other words, it will bend rather than snap straight away. And that even though it's bent, it'll stiffen back up again. If you can sort of think of the physical forces, a wood can absorb a lot before it will actually end up being damaged. And so we think that the prospect of producing a hardwood post for the vineyards is very exciting, just on the strength that we can offer. It's up to 3 times stronger than pine timber.
Where's your business at? Have you got the seeds that you want now, and you're just planting up big forests, or...?
Well, we haven't gone to that stage yet, Chris. I mean, what has been very interesting about the project has been how it's evolved in the last 7 years, where we identified the issue and then had to look at what species could be suitable that were of high durability and adapted to growing in the New Zealand environment, particularly where the vineyards are. So we've selected, that's where the dryland focus comes from. New Zealand drylands are on our east coast, which are where our vineyards are. So you're talking Gisborne, Hawke's Bay, the Wairarapa, you know, around Martinborough area, and obviously Marlborough and down into Canterbury. It's a bit cold to produce, to grow eucalypts in Otago, central Otago, but we will certainly keep that in mind if we found a suitable species that had that adaptability. But
you don't need to grow the eucalypts in the wine region. You can just grow them anywhere and just ship them around, can't you?
Yeah, well, there's just some real economies of scale and producing them near, we think, the vineyards, and also, again, that carbon footprint. I mean, if you think it through, what we're trying to do is establish plantations, say, within 5 or 6K of where we're sitting, here in the middle of the Wairau Valley, and all that would need to be done is to send a mechanised harvester into the block of trees. They could be cut and pointed if need be, and turned into posts on that site and shipped 5 kilometres back down the road to the vineyards.
Okay.
Currently, a pine post, for that to be produced, if it's a tree grown, say, in Marlborough, there's only one processing plant really of any scale that can handle a lot of the wood that's needed to produce the post for the industry, and that's in Nelson. So the wood is cut, it's sent to Nelson, it's then peeled and has to be dried out before it's then processed and filled with chemicals. Then it has to be dried out before it's put back on the truck and brought back to here.
Yeah.
So by the time that product gets back to the vineyard, it's, in terms of its carbon footprint, it's huge. And the people who supply the wood, the growers, forest growers like myself, they get very little for the raw material, because the costs have really gone into the high energy, you know, associated with producing the the chemicals.
So if you can get a piece of kit on site, you can do all the value add.
That's the one. We see that the forest grower then is very much in a position where he could be selling his wood direct to a grape grower. And the only person who needs to be involved other than those two are the contractor who will come in and turn his forest into posts if he's not, you know, not geared up to do that himself. And
so this is the sort of thing that a cocky can do quite easily.
Absolutely. And in fact, the vision for us now is not, while the wine industry is what really motivated me and others who are involved in the project to establish it, we see that the potential for this around the country, just for any form of agriculture, is huge, that really every farm in New Zealand could do with a stand of these eucalypts to produce fence posts for their property.
Have you identified the eucalypts now, or where are you at in terms of identifying the species?
Yes, well, we started with trials in 2003, and we had up to 25 different species that we evaluated in initial survival tests or trials.
Survival tests.
Yeah, well, you know, some species failed, and, you know, there was always going to be some losses. You can't predict these things. So we've now selected 5 species that have the attributes that we're after, and we've decided through forming the New Zealand Dryland Forest Initiative that we can do genetic breeding and improvement of those species so as to develop them as plantation species.
Is that in, like, I know some pine trees used to grow with, you know, lots of branches, and look at a pine forest now, it's just one post straight up and down sort of thing.
The variability, natural variability in eucalypts, and particularly some of the species that we've identified, is huge. If you plant a stand of trees with seed from wild populations, you get short ones and tall ones and ones with double leaders and things that are growing sometimes sideways and quite what we would call an ugly looking duckling, which doesn't mean to say that it's always going to be that way. And, you know, the story of the ugly duckling is it turns into a beautiful swan. And we see that with our breeding work, we're going to take these species, and by selecting from genetic base populations of something like over 20,000 trees per species, we might pick the 50 best looking trees, and then we can do things like clone those, or we can set them up in seed orchards to do controlled pollination. We could consider even hybridizing between the species, so you get hybrid vigor, and that is now our main project is this genetic breeding work.
And how long do they take to grow these eucalypts?
We're getting some excellent growth rates on some of the what I'd call an optimal site, and in that case, I've been measuring young trees this morning in our first breeding populations we planted last year. So those trees are, they've only been in the ground since November, and here we are mid-March, and the best of them are 1.5 metres tall in that time, and those growth rates will improve as the trees get a bit older, and we anticipate getting on optimal sites between 2 to 3 metres annual growth.
And what do you need for a good, you know, is one tree a post, or are you after, you know, multiple posts, or?
We haven't got too hung up about that, because if you look at how the Australians handle eucalypt in terms of producing fence posts out of natural forests, and I've been and travelled to Australia at least half a dozen times in the last sort of 6 or 7 years, and the Aussies split posts into quarter rounds, depending on the size of the piece of wood. Sometimes they'll do them in rounds. So it'll really depend on more the way you grow the trees and how big you let them, you know, at what age you decide they're big enough that you'll start turning them into post wood.
I suppose there's a choice. You can either grow lots of small ones in high density, or and or thin some out and then grow bigger ones with lower density, but then you make multiple posts out of them. Is that sort of, there's an economics there, isn't there, about speed of growth versus how much you can get out of it?
You've got it right to a T, Chris. You actually seem to know something about growing trees, because a lot of people don't understand that, and it's good that you've explained that to your listeners, if you think about sowing seed to grow carrots in a garden, if you don't go in and thin the carrots after a while, you'll end up with still lots and lots of carrots, but they'll all be skinny.
Yeah.
And if you want skinny carrots, well, that's what you'll grow. But if you want fat carrots, you've got to do that thinning work. So that management, or silviculture is the term foresters use, we haven't got there yet, and being able to say this is the optimum way that you could grow these species. However, there's a lot of good work being done on growing eucalypts in New Zealand, and we've got we can make some pretty informed choices around that, and some people are already doing that. We're not having vast areas planted yet, but there's a lot of trial plantings. There's probably in the last 5 or 6 years, there'd be, you know, a couple of 100,000 trees gone into different trial blocks and small plantations that people have decided they're not going to wait for our improved material from our breeding programs. They basically just want to get stuck in and start growing some trees.
And when do you think your business would become self-sufficient and economically viable?
I should probably run very quickly through our members. The project is based at the Marlborough Research Centre Trust here in Marlborough, and that's a unique regional research base that, in fact, all of the wine industry researchers, a large amount of it is done at that same locality. So they're providing our administration support for the program, and we have had funding from the Agricultural Marketing and Development Trust, that's AGMART, and we've had funding from Marlborough Lions and Proceed New Zealand Limited.
Marlborough Lions or Lions?
Lions. Electricity company, because they want those cross arms. We've got Proceed New Zealand Limited, who are the largest tree seed company in Australasia. They're actually a Ngāi Tahu trading company, and so they've got extensive interest beyond just producing seed in this project. We've also got the support of the local regional council, that's the Marlborough District Council. Really exciting is that our science providers are the New Zealand School of Forestry. It's based at the University of Canterbury. And the university are really backing what we're doing. They've been contributing substantial funding, but also technical and scientific support. And they see this program as being a future program the university will continue with for many years into the future. So when you ask about the sustainability of the project, the research and development side of it, we're at a point of having asked government for a substantial grant towards maintaining the establishment of our breeding populations. and we're hopeful we'll hear on that next month, that we're successful. That will set us up for 3 years to establish all the breeding populations for the species that we've selected. Following that, the university intends to seek foundation of research science and technology funding to do all the actual genetic selection and evaluation work. And that's very exciting work because we're focused on growing durable timber. There's two key attributes that you've got to breed for. One is early heartwood development, because if you don't have heartwood within the tree or the trunk of the tree, any sapwood is basically non-durable. So you've got to promote the early development of heartwood, and then you want that heartwood to be loaded with those extractives that we were talking about and be durable.
So the sapwood's like the outer rings of the tree, which are softer anyway, aren't they?
Yeah.
And the heartwood's the harder stuff.
That's the stuff that we're growing. So the early work that we plan to do with selection will be on for growth and form, because we want decent-looking trees that are reasonably straight and growing fast. But then within about 4 to 5 years, we'll be cutting small trees down, and they'll be evaluated in the labs at the university to be checking them for early heartwood development and early durability. And the Australians have done a little bit of work on this, and we got very excited. This is about 2008. They tested some 8-year-old trees of one particular species, sugar gum, it's called, Eucalyptus cladocalyx. And they found that both early heartwood development and durability of heartwood was definitely genetically linked. So in other words, it was variable in the population, so you could select and breed for it. And that by age 8, trees had adequate heartwood and adequate durability that you could turn around and use them for a post that would last for more than 20 years.
Yep.
So when that research, we got our hands on that research a couple of years ago, that's really focused our program on this selection for early heartwood and durability in very young trees.
Is there any export markets for this once you've sort of got into it, or has Europe got their own breeding program for?
I think the export potential for durable timber is huge. The Australian markets traditionally for the sale of eucalypt hardwood have been substantial. And it's not just the size of the markets, it's the value of those markets. So landed on wharf prices in Australia for products like power poles are up to $300 a cubic metre. Now, some of your listeners might not understand what that figure means, but comparatively, if you're exporting a log to China of pine timber on wharf, you'll get, if it's the very top grade, you'll get up to about $100. So we're talking three times potentially the value on wharf.
What about growth rates, though? Because if it takes longer than three times to grow it, then...
You know, we're confident, similar growth rate. On good sites in New Zealand, we'd be able to produce polewood within about 25 to 30 years. You then move to sawn timber products, so those crossarms that we've talked about on the top of power poles. I did a trip to New South Wales last year and went to a couple of sawmills where they're still managing to get sufficient logs to cut crossarm timber. And at the mill door, so this is the guys who have sawn the timber, so all they've done is bring the logs in, cut it up. It's green sawn, stacked in packs. They get $1,200 a cube at the mill door Australian. Now, that's equivalent to about $1,400 a cube. That's better prices than for pruned radiata that's been kiln dried.
Yeah.
So we think that's pretty exciting if you've got those sorts of values.
Yeah.
The other aspect of the program is that these timbers are also potential substitute for tropical hardwoods, many of which are being logged unsustainably in both Southeast Asia as well as in South America. There's huge international demand for hardwood from the tropics, and we believe that if we can prove that our timbers got similar properties and for example, some of our species have deep red colour that's very attractive timber, that our timbers will substitute those. Certainly will substitute the imports to New Zealand. A lot of people probably don't know that we import something like $30 million worth of timber, hardwood timber, into the country every year. But the question has got to be asked, is that what we want to be doing when New Zealand's set up and could be growing its own durable timbers that would replace all of those imports?
Okay then, Paul, I think we'd better wrap it up there. Thank you very much for your time.
Okay, that's great, thanks.